Hello, everybody. Welcome to Get Your Learning Groove On. Today we have Judy Arnold with us. I'm very excited to finally make this happen with her. So thank you, Judy, for your patience.
Thank you.
Just so that everyone knows, I'm Sara Lynn, founder of Inspirative Learning, home learning mom of five boys, life coach, learning coach, mentor, and guide, and I like to call myself a life enthusiast. And of course, I'm your host here at Get Your Learning Groove On Telesummit. This is a great time for us parents and mentors and guides to step into our own learning groove, get inspired, get organized, and have a lot of fun. I do truly believe that the more fun we are having, the more fun that is had by all. We have that absolute ability to set the tone in our household, and our attitude alone can lift our learners to such great heights. So here we go into the call. The purpose of these calls is just that, a great kickstart for September and a reminder that, you know, we're aiming for that sustainable energy. Oftentimes in September, we, you know, get really excited and we sign up for all kinds of things, try on some new tools and end up burning ourselves out a month later or just weeks later. So when I talk about getting inspired and energized, I'm really referring to that sustainable energy and enthusiasm that kind of keeps us engaged and challenged and inspired, because we really want to have fun this learning year. We really want to make it our adventure too, because again, the more fun we're having, the more fun had by all. And if you're new to home learning, this Telesummit, each of the guests will be providing all kinds of great tools and insight that is going to be so great to put you to use in your own home learning adventure. And if you're a veteran home learner and been doing this for some time, be prepared to get refreshed and infused. There's going to be lots of great tools that, you know, you might have known before, maybe just a reminder, or maybe even some new things. You know, be open to the newness. So today, we have Judy Arnold with us. She's a well-known Canadian parenting expert. She's been seen on television interviews such as CBC, CTV, and Global, as well as through publications such as Chatelaine, Today's Parent, Canadian Living, and Parents Magazine. She's also the author of the bestseller, Discipline Without Distress, 135 Tools for Raising Caring, Responsible Children Without Timeout, Spanking, Punishment, or Bribery. And she's also a parent of five unschooled children. So Judy will be sharing her tips and tools for home learning, unschooling, post-secondary enrollment, and effective family communication. So I like to preface all my calls with this as kind of like a disclosure. Please take what you wish and leave the rest behind. We all are very unique individuals. We all have our own perspective on our own path. We have varying philosophies, different learning styles, and different children with different backgrounds. So please, take what works for you and leave the rest behind. This is meant to, you know, provide you with some new tools. Yes, and I'll warn everybody that everyone might hear some children in the background. They are being cared for. Their voices just may come through on occasion. They're having some fun back there. And somebody maybe not so much fun right now, but will be very soon. So, no, let me just wait 1 second here. I'm just pause for 1 second. Hi, buddy. Hi, you're going to go to the park with Joseph? I'm just going to move into the other room over here. He wanted my room, so I'm going to let him have it. So, as you can see, sometimes you have to go on the flow with these kind of calls and with parenting and with having many children. I'm sure, Judy, you have had these experiences in the past.
Many times.
Very much. So here we go. We might as well just dive right in and take that cue to get this call started. So hi, Judy. I'm so glad that you could join us today.
Hi. I'm glad to be here.
Yes, I know it's been something to make this call happen, so I appreciate your patience and your support with that. So that's fabulous.
Oh, no worries.
So, you are classified as quite the home learning veteran, you know. You're on the opposite end of the scale that I'm at right now. You know, you've been there, you've done that, and you're definitely have gotten that brownie badge, I would say. But before we get talking kind of about your present day experience, I just kind of wanted to kind of step back into your beginnings. You know, I was wondering, how and why did you decide to take the home learning adventure, take that plunge and start with this home learning journey?
Well, I think we took that adventure about 13 or 14 years ago. I had four children then. I have, right now, I have four boys and a daughter, princess in the middle. And my first two sons had been going to kindergarten and grade one. And I always knew I would like to homeschool, but I'm married to a partner who doesn't agree with it. So we decided that we'd send them to French immersion because we had about four schools in our neighborhood. The kids had different ideas, though. They really did not want to go to school. So as my son once said, he said, why would I want to go to a building and share a computer with 25 other kids when I have my own computer at home? And he had a point. And for many, many days, I had to pretty well drag them out of the house, get in the car, jostle them with a baby and a toddler, and drive them to a school and pry them out of the car. And after a while, wow. I just thought, this is nuts. This is so not working. We got to do something different. So then my husband, he said to me, I want to go work in Peru for 2 years and on shift work, so, you know, 24 days out, 10 days back, and is that okay? And I said, well, I want to homeschool. Is that okay? And well, we agreed, so it worked out really good because the kids actually got to see their dad when he was home for those 10 days every month.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's a great compromise that you guys came to, and you're right. It would be really flexible within that different kind of out-of-the-box kind of schedule. It would really work for the kids and for your husband to get that time with them, too, when he was back.
Yeah, that was really good for them. They could go on day trips together and field trips and just spend some time together.
Wow. So it's kind of interesting because, you know, I don't often hear, too, of the children being so, you know, strong in their wants and desires. You know, oftentimes, you know, children will enter school and they'll just make do with, I guess, a situation. There might be some, you know, mild dislikes of it, but a lot of times the home learning adventure does stem from a parent's desire. So it's really interesting, you know, the desire that your children really had and how much they, you know, very much knew their wants at even that age, which is fabulous.
They did. In fact, there were times my daughter, she just went for kindergarten, and then when she noticed the boys were having so much fun at home, she decided, no, she's going to homeschool too. But then in grade three, she got the intense desire. She wanted to go to school, and she begged me and begged me and begged me. And it was April, which is, you know, the end of a school year almost. And it was, and finally I had to go to the school and beg them to let her in. And, yeah, she really wanted to try it out. And because every year we say to the kids, well, what do you want to do this year? Do you want to homeschool? Do you want to go online? Do you want to try a school? And basically it's their choice. They're in charge of their learning. And whatever course of action they take, we tend to draw up a contract. And I would say, okay, well, if you're going to do this, here are my needs. For example, when my daughter went to school, I would say, okay, you have to be ready every morning. I'm not going to nag you. Mm-hmm. And then for homeschooling, I would say, okay, you know, I'm hoping you're going to spend this many hours off the computers, maybe some quiet reading time. And then they would add their stipulations, you know, because a contract has to favor both parties.
Mm-hmm.
And then that would set the pace for the year. That's what we decided we were going to do for that year. And then we always reevaluate it the next summer and decide.
Wow, I love that.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's a great idea to, you know, be so open that way. And again, it is them taking that accountability, and it's empowering for them to have those options and even to have such a contract like that, so they, you know, fully understand what they're getting into, and they also get to make clear what they're looking for and what their needs are. And that's a really fabulous idea to kind of make that kind of yearly open contract and kind of collaboratively together.
Yeah, yeah. And it does help through the year because, you know, there are times that everybody balks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you can say, well, see what you signed your name to. But,
it brings that perspective back, exactly what the wants and desires are, for sure. That's
yeah,
great.
Yeah.
So I understand now you unschool your children presently. So when you first started into your schooling process and your home learning adventure, was that always the way? Did you unschool from the beginning, or is it something that kind of evolved over time?
It definitely evolved after about the first year. So
okay.
The first year, like many people, we did school at home because, you know, we need the security of what we know.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then, your kids don't listen to you.
The kids take it on themselves to make unschooling happen.
So they, you know, for the first week, they think, oh, this is new and novel, and then you lose them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a really democratic parent. I am not very authoritarian, and I didn't want to use punishments and rewards to get them to do schoolwork. So, and I had another baby, so
mm-hmm.
It's really hard to nurse a baby, and you're trying to keep two reluctant kids at the kitchen table doing workbooks. It just doesn't work. So then we thought, okay, we gotta make changes here. So we just sort of slid into unschooling. We did more field trips. They played a lot of computer games, and with Dad out of town, many nights we didn't go to bed till midnight, and if they had an idea, we would run with it, right? Because we could have had that flexibility. And so, and at the same time, too, I was teaching adult education, and adult ed is very much unschooling type principles. It's about going with the learner's agenda, not so much the teacher's agenda. And to me, that just made sense with kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yeah. It's interesting how, you know, those modalities are very accepted with adult education and actually very encouraged. You know, there's so many seminars on, you know, following your desires and your passions and your interests, and that's how people learn best.
Mm-hmm.
But when it does come to children, somehow we formulate a different set of rules in the traditional ways. It's interesting.
Yeah, we don't seem to trust children that they are, you know, have the experience to know what they want to know. But yet, it's amazing. What I did during those years was keep really good records on what they did. I took a lot of pictures of what they did just so that I remembered in my mind that, you know, mm-hmm. we weren't sitting around watching TV all day. We were actually very busy.
Mm-hmm.
So that was good.
Mm-hmm. That's actually something I've heard a few parents mention, is because oftentimes especially with unschooling, you know, people really are just living their lives. And so they're learning, you know, they're learning through their living experience and exposures and ideas, that it's oftentimes we don't log or take notice of the things that are happening. And too easy it can be, you know, after the end of the week or month or year, we're not as clear with the amount of learning that really did happen.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, you know, I did that for, you know, a couple of years, just, you know, we were doing all kinds of obviously great things, but, you know, you couldn't pinpoint these exact experiences because, you know, our memories are only so great, especially when you're so busy with so many things. And then one year I did make that commitment for different reasons to just, you know, start logging and keeping, you know, like just almost like a scrapbook, but not really a scrapbook, you know, pictures
mm-hmm.
and ideas and what we were doing, and just making note each week or even each day what kind of things the kids were up to, and doing more for my own self. And it wasn't really to monitor in a way, it was just more to notice. And I was absolutely astounded by how much was really going on in just the everyday experiences, and how much was really happening with their interests, and how deep things really became. Because I just took it, I guess, all for granted. So yeah, that was definitely a great pivotal point for me, was when I actually started noticing more and observing more and taking time to. And even for the kids too, just to say, you know, for that encouragement when those tougher times came in different years, or the discouragement came, and it's like, well, just remember when you did this or you did this, and you know, it was really uplifting for them to remember those times and even look back at the pictures and stuff. It kind of re-inspired them and reignited them many times.
Yes, that's right. They, as older adults right now, or young adults, they don't really sit and look at the pictures, but
mm-hmm.
they don't remember a lot about those years either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the summer we spent in Vancouver, don't remember anything, and it's kind of nice that I have pictures to show them that, you know, someday they may want to look at them.
Yeah, you never know. One day when they have children, you know, or not, you know, in the future.
Yeah, definitely.
So we've been talking a lot about unschooling. I know you are an unschooling advocate. And I'm curious, like, how would you define unschooling? What would you define it as?
I would define unschooling as it's a lifestyle that allows a child free reign over his own education. So he gets to choose how, what, where, when he's going to learn, and even if. But I can't really say if, because all kids are learning from the minute they're born to, you know, the minute we die, we are just born learners. So, yeah, so it's just a lifestyle to allow the learning to flow in.
I like that, the free reign over their education. I like that. And a question for you, too, because I think a big misconception with unschooling, a big kind of myth that's out there that I've heard upon myself as well, is, you know, that nothing's being done. Like, your role, it's kind of a lazy way to school. It's kind of this myth out there that, you know, the parents' role is just to do nothing, and that's why lots of people choose to do unschooling. I know that's not true, but I'm curious, what is your role to your learners in your unschooling household? Do you have a role?
Okay, that's a good question. And, you know, there are so many myths about unschooling.
I know, there's so many. So that could be a whole call in itself. All the myths,
yeah,
unschooling.
All the myths. I think the role is where school at home or school at school is you have a teacher transferring information to a learner that's hopefully recepting the information. Your role, and it could be a teacher or a parent, there are unschooling schools, is that of facilitator. And just as in adult education, we move into a facilitator role, which is basically setting up the conditions to allow the learning to happen. And it's not going in with a preconceived lesson plan of outcomes. It's setting up something for the day or a plan for the day of what you all want to attempt that day. What do you want to do? Like, it's sitting down with the kids and saying, here's what I can do. I can drive. I got money. I can pack a lunch. What do you guys want to do? So it's that kind of facilitator, because a lot of learning that the kids want, they can't access yet. For example, my son in grade, when he was 15, he really wanted to learn welding. And being a 15-year-old phoning around to schools and welding shops, they didn't really take him seriously. So he needed me as an adult to phone around and try and set that up for him. So I was facilitating his learning, but he really wanted to satisfy his own curiosity about welding.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so you really become that kind of facilitator, that medium that they can go to in between and, I guess, get help with finding the resources and encouraging those kind of things.
Right, right. We're also the driver and the check writer.
Yeah, that's so true. I know. The driving alone keeps us very busy.
Oh, oh.
Yes, I feel like I need a chauffeur's cap.
The miles we log.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I know many people use the term reluctant learners, and a lot of people feel that's kind of another myth with, I guess, unschooling, is that, you know, well, if they're not forced to learn, or if there isn't an agenda, or this topic isn't covered, how will they learn? And what about those reluctant learners, those ones that don't seem to like learning or aren't inspired or aren't engaged? You know, there's those challenges that can happen with them. Like, do you have any suggestions with, you know, quote, reluctant learners?
That's a funny word, reluctant learners. Cause, like I said, I don't think there's anybody alive who doesn't learn. And maybe the problem is just finding the content they want to learn or getting them excited about something. For example, you know, whatever their field of interest, if it's a child's desire to or love of hockey or outdoors or animals, and then trying to engage them in learning that involves those interests. I'm thinking about homeschooling parents who, you know, want them to write an essay. I mean, that's a great way to engage them, is to make it as personable to the learner as possible, and let them write about whatever interests them. You know, as much as possible, go with what they're keen about.
Mm-hmm. So it seems, too, like a lot of what your role as a parent comes into this in itself is really, you know, knowing your child and getting them to, I guess, tap into their interests or encouraging their interests and, you know, I guess, exposing them to kind of some different ideas and topics along
it
the
is.
Way.
It is. And the other part is, I'll put on my parent educator hat here, though, is that you got to look at kids' developmental stages. So for the early years, like from 6 to 12, kids are so hands-on. They don't learn well from paper, textbooks, workbooks, yeah. They learn well from doing and being immersed in the learning environment. So for that stage, as much as possible, let them give them something to do or take them somewhere or let them experience it with all their body parts, their eyes, their ears, their nose, their smell, that kind of thing. And then around age 13, 14, they start developing their abstract thinking. And, yeah, then they're more ready for book work, right? Not a whole lot of book work, but in regular school, a lot of kids that age just get distracted by junior high, and the hormones are raging, and they don't study very well at that point either. But my experience is that my kids have really developed, been into self-developed learners at around age 16. That's pretty well when we handed over control of what they had to do, and they just ran with it, right? They really became self-disciplined, and you wouldn't have to nag them or tell them to do anything because they really took it on by themselves then. And I think that fits with development.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Like, and it's interesting because a lot of different modalities and philosophies talk about child development, and they all, you know, really speak similar stages with that. Like, they all say it their own way, but very similar to that, you know, 6 to 12 years of being that hands-on, you know, love of learning, experiencing, playing with ideas, and just a playful type learning. And then, you know, they move into, you know, trying on a scholarly side of things and going a bit deeper. And then they move, yeah, really into that self-directed role where they're really, really taking charge and dedicated to kind of their future and, you know, or what they're looking for in their life and kind of take that ownership of it. So kind of neat to watch them unfold through the years, I'm sure. Like, you know, especially for you because you've gone through the whole spectrum. It must be really neat to kind of sit back and you know, see, watch it all happen.
It is. It's really interesting because I have right now my youngest is 10, and he doesn't want to do anything with workbooks at all. And then my oldest is 21, and my three oldest are in university right now, so they're totally self-sufficient on learning.
Yeah, they're in their own path now entirely, taking charge and taking it by
the reins. But they used to be like that at 10, so.
And I guess that's kind of nice with the younger ones is having that trust and faith even more strongly rooted just with having experienced it previously.
It is. It's nice to look in hindsight because I was, you know, when it's your first, you do worry. You worry, am I doing enough? Am I, you know, is this child going to be uneducated and flipping burgers when they're 21 because of me? And I think I want to tell parents just to relax. It will happen. Learning will happen.
Mm-hmm. So your youngest is 10, your oldest is 21, and you have three in university now.
Right.
So what was that like? Like, you know, going because have you unschooled kind of the whole way through? Would you consider yourself kind of an unschooler the whole way through?
Pretty well up until grade 10.
Okay.
At that point, they all kind of picked a path, and
that goes along a bit with unschooling as well, right?
they're leading
their path and choosing their ways.
Well, they do. I'm of the unschooler. Like, you know, if they want to take a course, fine. If they want to go to grade 3 for the last 3 months, fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have to be self-directed. So,
so
we looked at high school in Alberta. You do need. To get into university, you don't need a diploma, but you do need your 4 grade 12 core courses and an option. So we looked at that and said, okay, how do you want to get there? So some of the kids, they self-studied. wrote the exams. Other kids took online courses. One son, he wasn't very good with online. He needed a classroom for higher math, so he went to an adult upgrading school. And, yeah, that's how they all got their requirements. And my oldest, he finished, but he finished without any math or science. So he decided he wanted to do nursing. And you need a lot of math and science for nursing. So he upgraded, and it only took him a year and a half to get most of his high school math and science for nursing. So it wasn't that painful. Like, mm-hmm. We live in a country where doors are never closed. So
that's what I think
wonderful.
We as parents sometimes forget, especially when we're kind of choosing this home learning journey, is we, you know, want them absolutely prepared with every single skill that they could have on hand by the age of 18 so they can have every door open to them at
mm-hmm.
that time.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I understand, too, it's, you know, the doors aren't always closed at 18 if they change their mind about their path, or if 19 or 20 they change their mind and they need something. You know, it's almost that desire, too, that desire of, you know, if it was nursing or whatever that desire might be, it really inspires them to get whatever prerequisites or things that they need to get into that program. It's, you know, pushes them and propels them to just do it and take charge of that.
Yes, yes. Once they know what they want to do, then they're highly motivated, right? And then mm-hmm. they get the good marks and the scholarships. But if it's something they don't know what to do and they're only going for somebody else, it's not mm-hmm. going to be a easy road.
Mm-hmm. And I guess it's never really too late, you know.
It's
in that
never
sense,
too
so,
late.
You know, no. even looking at, you know, the number of people that change careers later in their years, you know, it's not like we have to set in stone our whole life future path by that age. We can always change and choose and kind of direct our paths accordingly.
Absolutely. And they actually talk about that in first year student orientations is that, you know, 70% of you guys here are going to change your major over the 4 years. Like, you're not going to mm-hmm. end up where you started.
Yeah.
And
well,
that's life, right?
Yeah, it is. It's like once you get out there and exposed to new ideas and new things you didn't even realize existed, or you never tried that hat on before and didn't know how it fit, you all of a sudden, you know, get inspired in a new direction, and which is kind of
yeah.
fun.
And that's what you kind of want to do during the school years. You know, like, sure, you needed writing skills and a little math knowledge, but kids need to find their passions, too. And very often we kind of suppress their passions in order to get the academics. And then
mm-hmm.
they're 18 and don't know what they want to do.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, it's great. It's one thing I do find with talking to a lot of home learner parents that have kind of, you know, given some freedoms to their children as they've gone through their home learning path is that they have gotten to try so many different things that they do really take on at, you know, the ages of 15, 16, 17, 18. They seem very directed with where their next step is going. Even if it's not their life step, it's, you know, they're very directed on where their next step is, which is pretty inspiring, you know.
Yeah.
'Cause I know sometimes graduating high school, it's a very scary thing when you're coming out of high school from a very school perspective of,
yeah.
you know, not really being sure and kind of taking a guess in a direction because you have to do something, but, you know, not really having that passion behind it. So.
Yes, and the bonus is that you have so much more time to explore options
mm-hmm.
than kids in school who are very limited in time.
Mm-hmm. So for other home learning students that are kind of wishing to apply for post-secondary, because, again, this is, again, another, I think, misconception with home learning in general, too, of you know, well, your kids can't go to university. They need to, you know, have certain requirements to go. They must go in through the school system. And I think, you know, at least having so many great communities online, there's, you know, a lot of support out there. What resources are available for home learning students that are wishing to apply?
I think what people need to do is just check out your home city's post-secondary institution websites and just look at a few career options or programs and see what their requirements are, because they're not requesting diplomas. They're requesting certain courses, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you can get those certain courses in different ways. But the important part is it is competitive. I won't deny that. depends on the pool of applicants that year on what their admitting average is. So it's probably important to know if, say, you're going to go into teaching. You want to look and see what was the average that of all the kids who applied for teaching the year before, and it's probably the same this year or the next year. So with that in mind, then you know what courses you need and what marks you need. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, they don't really look at volunteer work. I was really disappointed at that. They don't look at extracurricular activities. Scholarships do. Now, they look at a well-rounded person, but to get into post-secondary, all you need are specific courses and pretty good marks.
Okay. So I guess, yeah, that could be really great to also ease your mind then, too, even if, you know, your children are starting to approach those high school years, even if it's, you know, a few years still until you're actually applying, to even just, you know, take a meander through the sites to get a better foundation of what is really being requested. And it's probably handy to share that with the learner as well, so then they can, as they're starting to make their decisions, they know how to correct themselves, which I guess is probably handy when you do your, you know, beginning of the year kind of contracts or talking about your learning year coming. I'm sure that's, you know, big on that, of, you know, what are your needs and what do you need to attain from here.
Yeah, and each child is different. For example, I got one son who absolutely hates to write, absolutely. And I said to him, well, you know, you absolutely need the grade 12 English course to go to any university. But if you look at age requirements, he could wait until he's 20 and just challenge the provincial exam in that one, and then there's his course, right? So he wouldn't have to take English all through high school. If he felt he was confident enough, he could just do the exam, and there he has his marks and to get in. So yeah, it's looking at what each child wants to do and what their needs are.
And what options are available to them, because I think you're right, there's a lot of times more than just one way. And sometimes there's many ways, and the more we kind of research, the more we find, oh, there's even more options that are out there. And, you know, and even different schools. Like, I know some people, too, choose the college-first route and getting some college courses first that then, you know, that are they're aligned with and affiliated with the university, and they get transferred over, or at least it helps in with their acceptance. So there seems to be, you know, a lot more options, especially, I think, as years are coming, you know, because there's, you know, more home learners and more unschoolers and just, you know, more people coming from different perspectives, that it seems that there seems to be more options available.
There is. And speaking on to parents with children who have a learning disability, it's amazing the supports that are available at the post-secondary level. Yeah, just amazing.
Oh, wow, great.
I felt there was way more than in a bricks and mortar school. And, you know,
I wouldn't have thought that, actually. That kind of surprised me. That was a myth I had. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, when you homeschool, you compensate, you accommodate, you make a lot of special accommodations for your learner. But, yeah, you can get the same in post-secondary. So it's kind of nice.
That is really nice. It's great to know, because I think that is definitely something that people feel, is that the same kind of accommodations aren't made as you go further. So, you know, that options become more limited. But that's great to know.
Yeah. Yeah, they're really good.
So a question for you, since you do kind of have some, you know, some that are into that post-secondary life, you know, and it sounds like you have a very open relationship with your children. How do they feel about being unschooled? Like, how do they feel now looking back and being in a university environment? How do they feel about it?
I think when I talked to them, they said they really enjoyed it. They loved having the free time to explore what they wanted to do. Like, my daughter is a writer. She's loves to read and write, and she had hours in the day to do that. So she really likes it. And she really, her adjustment to post-secondary, so she's going to a university now with 30,000 people. she actually really likes the adult atmosphere. It's much, she has no patience. Actually, none of the kids have any patience for you know, if they took a course in high school, the peers and the immature antics, they just have no use for that. And they like the more adult environment of post-secondary. My daughter says she's going to homeschool her kids. Now, for the boys, I think they liked it too. They certainly had a lot of time playing video games. But, I think they enjoyed it. They enjoyed having a childhood. They remember it, like the fun parts. And, yeah, and now they're ready to get down to business and study.
Great. And then so talking, I guess, going back a little bit to the high school experience, because, yeah, that's right, I guess they would have taken some courses in high school, and they were talking a bit about the peers and stuff. Did they face any other kind of obstacles, like transitioning into that, into transitioning to taking, you know, high school and hopping into that, you know, the brick-and-mortar fashion of it?
I'll be frank here and say the one problem we did see was that there were a few peer groups that were as mature as they, but for the most part, they thought the kids were pretty immature, and they had a hard time relating to that because they've never, been raised in that culture. For example, my daughter, she doesn't care, about makeup, and she wears makeup, but it's not a primary concern with her. She has more real interests, and like she would just love to sit and talk to someone about Jane Austen, but she couldn't find too many kids interested in that in school. When we went to parent-teacher interviews, a lot of the teachers say, oh, well, their maturity level is really high and they'll have no problems at university. And I said, well, yeah, but right now,
<You're here> now.
they're kind of lonely.
Yes.
Because we, by high school, a lot of home learners dissipate, right? They go to different schools, they move away. It's kind of a problem breaking into cliques at that point. So we didn't take too many courses in a school. We took a lot, a few online and a few self-directed, and a few through a smaller private school.
Were you able to meet their social needs at home? Like, I know you were saying how it's hard, because I know that it is true that a lot of home learners, once they do get to that high school age, many do choose to go the school route, or, you know, different things happen, and so that there seems to be less in the communities in that age. So were you able to find ways to meet their social needs?
We did. You need a few dedicated, hardcore homeschooling high school parents who make it happen, who organize field trips, willing to drive the groups around. And they're few and far between just because so many go back to school, right? We did that. We organized a lot of teen events, bowling, Christmas parties, things like that. But for the most part, like, each kid only had about one or two best friends, and that's all they wanted. So they were quite happy with just having that. But their main connection is still with family, and I think that's kind of a good thing, actually. They don't need hordes of peers. And then at post-secondary, then my daughter, she's living in residence because she wants to have a bigger, wider social circle. So,
exactly.
But again, the kids are more mature, and it's much more an adult relationship then, which they prefer.
That's great. No, it's great to hear, the spectrum that you've gone through.
Yeah.
You obviously are very experienced. You've gone through that spectrum. You've seen the success of it because, again, you have, students that, learners that are in university and obviously have a drive to learn and a drive for, something in their lives that way, which is fabulous. But I understand you still have two learners at home doing, at different stages and doing their thing. Do you find it still, now that you have all that experience, that it's smooth sailing, or do you still find you still face some challenges or doubts or any obstacles?
It's different. You know how they say you're a different parent for each child?
Mm-hmm.
So it is. Part of it is I'm getting tired. I'm getting tired. I've been there and done that, all the field trips, so many times. I'm almost gagging to do the same field trips with my youngest. But I know I probably should. But I think I'm just way more relaxed. We're spending more time at home. I don't feel the need I have to go and fill our calendar. Like, I think this whole year we didn't sign up to do any extracurricular. And I tell my friends, and they look at me, and their jaw drops on the floor, like, what, really? No groups, no clubs, no sports, no... And I say, yeah, no fundraising, no driving,
yeah, you
no volunteering.
The other mm-hmm.
But yeah, we're spending more time as a family. So I think, yeah, it's really good, but it's a lot more relaxed because I know, you know, when you first homeschool, you think, oh, we're going to face criticism that they don't have socialization. So new homeschoolers get out and they sign up for everything and they burn out by February.
mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, you get more relaxed, more confident, more in your skin, you know, once you get past that first year, which is your huge learning curve.
Mm-hmm. And I guess the nice thing, too, for the criticism aspect, because, you know, I find, you know, through those early years when you've made this decision to home learn, that, you know, those well-meaning family friends have lots to say about your decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the nice thing as years get older, not only does your own confidence grow, but, you know, the proof is kind of in the pudding that they see, okay, they are still socially apt. They are, you know, able to still function and communicate. And, you know, I guess the criticism probably lightens up as years go on as well.
Oh, it becomes silent, especially when you send all those naysayers, the grad pictures or the
mm-hmm.
the university entrance letters.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, it lessens. For sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the more bold you are, I think I would say to people, well, have you ever read a book on homeschooling? And they'd say, no, I wouldn't read something like that. And I say, well, when you do, you know, then let's have a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And because a lot of people just go by myths or whatever's portrayed in the media. And the media is such a bad job portraying homeschoolers or unschoolers. It's,
mm-hmm.
We well,
I think
are
that's
all
so many
stereotypes.
Of the misconceptions. So many of the misconceptions come, and they're the same questions that seem to be, you know, the same criticisms that seem to be mentioned again and again, and it doesn't matter how much proof seems to be out there against it to just, you know, show that it's totally false.
Yeah.
It's so hard to carry on those conversations because, you know, and I think that's a really great response, actually, is, you know, have you read a book? And once you have, I'd love to talk about it. But until that point, it is very challenging to have those conversations.
Mm-hmm. It is. Mm-hmm. It really is. And why bother? You know, put your energy mm-hmm. into positive things like going to play with the kids.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
So because inquiring minds want to know, what does your home learning environment and day kind of look like? Yeah.
Okay. Well,
I always like to vicariously live through somebody else or peep through a window into the life of somebody doing it and living it.
Well, when we first started, the kids would get up early because they were young kids, right? So our days would start at 7, 6. So that looked a lot different. They would just play the whole day pretty well. By the afternoon, I would drag them out somewhere because I like to socialize, and I had at least a couple activities we had signed up for. But nowadays, I have a 14-year-old and 10-year-old boy, and I'm up at 7, so I'm on the computer running a business while they're sleeping, and they pretty well roll out of bed around noon. And they don't eat yet because they're not morning eaters. So we probably have like breakfast, lunch around 1 o'clock, and then
wow.
And they'll read the newspaper, they'll play computer games right now, and then around the afternoon I I ask them to come with me on some errands, stuff we have to do. And then they help make dinner. And we'll watch a movie or, well, whatever. Whatever the day is like. Now that it's September, late fall, and the weather's nice, like, we want to get outside as much as possible. So I try and organize us on a outdoors event. But, yeah, it's very relaxed.
Excellent. What kind of things are inspiring your learners right now? Do they have anything that's really caught their attention or that they're going right into right now?
I would say the biggest thing right now is playing League of Legends online.
League of Legends, eh? Oh, that one hasn't hit our house yet. We're Minecraft over here.
Oh, yeah, we're Minecraft too. But League of Legends is a new game.
Okay.
It's a new online free game. Mm-hmm. So they're enamored with that one. And also the new World of Warcraft expansion pack came out. So they're overdosing on that right now. Which they do. They OD on these things for a couple of months. And then, then they do something else. And we're right in the middle of a kitchen reno, so they're doing their share of painting and sanding and cooking. It's kind of fun. They're learning a few things there.
Mm-hmm. And out of curiosity, just because I know you talk a lot about video games and stuff, do you find, and, you know, them ODing right now on certain games, do you find in the end that things balance out? Do you find that they still choose to do other kind of activities or, you know, engage?
I have to nudge them a bit. Like,
okay.
I mean, the games are really, really encompassing. They take a lot of their energy. So I have to say, okay, you've been on there 2 hours, time to go for a walk. I got to go mail a letter, right? So, but I would say my kids have learned so much from video games. In a way that workbooks and textbooks couldn't teach them. And not just educational games, but, you know, games like Civilization, like League of Legends, you know, Minecraft. They learn quite a lot of that, a lot of English, of writing. Two of my sons were late readers. They didn't read until 9 and 10. Mm-hmm. And I felt a little pressure from my supervising teacher to, you know, start doing phonics, start doing workbooks. But, you know, that just made them more frustrated. So I knew it would come. And, yeah, through playing video games and writing chat messages, they learned to read, write. Yeah.
I've heard World of Warcraft has been encouraged many student learners to read and write and spell and things like that, just because they want to communicate with others online.
They do. They
that
do. And they
just pushes it.
Yeah, and they'll call out and say, "Mom, how do you spell catch?" Because they don't want to look like they're misspelling anything, because there's this peer pressure online to not do that. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of neat. Nothing's a better motivator for them.
Motivation that way.
Yeah, but my second son, now, he's a logically intelligent guy. He loves math. He loves science. No wonder he's going into engineering. He was my video gamer that I really worried about, because he displayed almost addictive behavior. And but there were times where he curbed himself and he shut down the games for months at a time and just decided he wasn't going to do any more and he's going to do something else. So that was good. That was good.
Yeah, it's great when you see that self-regulation happening and, you know, less nudging needed.
Yeah.
It always makes us feel better when less nudging is needed.
Yeah, but sometimes you get a nudge. I'm never a person to force, but I do like to
encourage,
nudge.
Suggest,
yeah, encourage.
Give ideas, topics.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Being kind of in this household.
Yeah.
There's some other options.
Yes. Yeah.
So if you only had one or two pieces of advice, tips, or tools to share with other home learners' families, what would they be? What would your advice be to them? I know you've already shared so much. But if you had something specific that you really wanted to get your message across.
I would say probably everyone else has said this too, but relax.
Actually, you know what? Funny enough, I thought everyone would, but you're the first too, actually.
Oh,
so there you go.
Really? Oh.
Yeah.
Relax. Enjoy the moment. You know, they'll learn what matters. They'll forget what doesn't matter. And just enjoy the journey. Don't always look like, oh, we got to get to this point and we got to get this done. And just, it's not a race. Just enjoy the journey and they'll enjoy it too. And keep connected to them. You know, I think that's the biggest bonus is that you spend so much time with your kids, not entertaining them. You know, I've never been an entertainer. They have to fill their own time. But just time together, you know, whether you're in the same room and chit-chatting and laughing together. And, you know, you're building a relationship, not just a resume. And remember that, right? Because they'll learn what they need to, but your relationship will be fabulous at the end.
Mm-hmm. And I think, too, it's that relationship that really helps through those other times, too, to just, you know, because then you really know your child and they feel really safe with communicating and having you as that facilitator. So, that yeah, that relationship is so essential.
And especially through the teen years. It's just,
I
love the teen years. I think, you know, if you keep that communication up, it's just wonderful. You know, it's not like, I mean, my kids aren't perfect kids. They got into a few things they shouldn't have, but at least we're still
learning experiences.
Yes, everything's a learning experience.
Exactly.
You know, the first time they throw up after a alcohol party. Yeah, but, you know, at least if your relationship's good, you talk, they move on, they learn. It's good.
That's excellent. So looking back after all these years, what has been your favorite benefit of unschooling?
Benefit, I would say, I would say just the freedom to do what we want without constriction is I think every teacher would love that in school.
It's
just to go where the kids want to go and not have to worry about meeting outcomes or meeting testing. You know, it's just a educational freedom. And I think that's been wonderful. And I think the kids have been allowed to develop where their passions are.
That's excellent. That must be so fun just to watch that unfold right through the whole spectrum. I'm really excited. My oldest is 13. So he's really, like, just so much has been changing in our day-to-day base. Like, he's just, you know, just transitioning into different phases of learning. And it's just so fun to just watch it blossom, and it definitely gives me so much more confidence and courage for the younger ones that are, you know, in their earlier years. It's like, yeah, this is okay. This works. It's good. I feel better now. My doubts are being appeased. It's okay.
Yeah.
And, I love watching the so many different benefits that start happening, and with the teen years coming, it's pretty exciting.
When you see where they want to go, you know, in the late teens, you'll look back and you'll think, oh, yeah, I saw signs of that, right? Like, you can really point out where their passions were from how they played or what they did.
Yeah.
Kind of neat to see.
That must be kind of neat. Yeah.
Yeah.
Watch that unfolding of them and that coming to them, and in hindsight, looking back, and like, oh, that's why. And I guess that's the great thing with unschooling is because we can't predict that future. We don't know what they're going to be on or where their interests will really take them. And so it's, you know, it's hard for us to, I guess, judge something as of value or not of value in those younger years, because they could be learning some really essential skills that are bringing them, you know, closer to that path and their ideas.
Yes, it does, I think, for sure. And I think another benefit is they're not embarrassed to be with you during the teen years, you know, like they'll... Mm. You can volunteer together. You can do things during the day that, you know, my daughter and I used to go to the ceramic studio. We used to go swimming. And, you know, if her friends were off school, we'd drag them along. But it was just fun to do things together. And
Yeah, no, it really seems to keep the family intact that way. And even with siblings, too, right? Like, you know, of course, siblings will always have some outs happening with, you know, that close encounter all those times. But it does seem to bring a certain bonding that happens in acceptance of each other and a deeper forming relationship instead of kind of, you know, aged appropriate, you know, into age categories and things.
Mm-hmm.
I love watching
that. That is so true. When I look at them now, like they're very close. Even though they've moved cities away, they still, you know, when they're that far apart, they still get together in game.
Great thing with the online world.
Yeah, they talk more than I get to talk because they talk through the chat mode of their games. But
yeah. You need to join in World of Warcraft.
I know.
And then you'd be chatting with them more.
No thanks. But yeah, same with my daughter, who's a gamer. She would find out how they were and stuff like that. But now that they're more in the same city, they're very good friends. And I remember, you know, the early years of homeschooling. I mean, there were days that they'd fight nonstop. Oh my gosh! And I'd be thinking, why am I doing this? I could send them to school, and the teacher could deal with them. But, you know, yeah, it does pay off. It really does in the end, I think.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. And then one thing just to close off, well, we're not closing it yet, but I guess my last question for you, and I'm kind of asking everybody this question, is because I'm all about our own learning adventure and our own inspiration, what is inspiring you these days and kind of what's on your itinerary for your own learning adventure or your own living adventure?
I am learning how to renovate a kitchen.
Oh,
yeah.
That's a big thing to tackle. Good for you.
What goes where and how many thousands of details you never know goes into it.
Grout color. I never thought about grout color ever in my life.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's very interesting. And I'm working on my next book, which I hope to have next fall, out on unschooling. So that's
excellent.
Going sort of.
Well, I'll have to keep posted on that.
Yeah, I think it'll be neat. I'm gonna address a lot of the myths and talk
mm-hmm.
about the journey.
Mhm. Excellent. And then too, I was wondering if you could share a little bit about yourself and the resources you offer, or kind of who you are and how people can maybe learn more about you or, you know, find out more information about you, if you can share a little bit about yourself that way.
Oh, okay. Well, I have a website called professionalparenting.ca, and on there I have a few resources on parenting, and I also am president of a nonprofit organization called attachmentparenting.ca, which is Attachment Parenting Canada. And on that website, I offer a lot of courses. Actually, we have several instructors that offer courses on parenting, everybody from one-year-olds to teenagers. And there's a lot of articles on there. There's a lot of courses. We do webinars on different topics of parenting. And there's also a dedicated page for home education because it tends to fit a lot with attachment parenting.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many resources out there on school, but not a whole lot on home education. Now, it is kind of Alberta-focused, but there's a lot that applies to everyone else, too, like what's your parenting style versus your homeschooling style or, you know, topics
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I do.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. I so appreciate you taking the time for this call. You know, you've just shared so much information on unschooling, especially those teen years and post-secondary and, you know, just giving lots of insight of, you know, relaxing and stepping back into it and enjoying the process, which sometimes we forget, especially being, you know, that September, October, those early months in the year where we tend to, you know, wind ourselves up more than our children.
Yes, the parent's peer pressure.
Exactly. We put our own pressures from our family and from our, you know, other people in our lives, even our spouses and all kinds of things. So,
yeah.
No, I really appreciate your confidence that you have and just that ease that you have with unschooling. And it's great to talk with somebody who has been through the whole spectrum and is still in it. You're still, you know, going and in it and doing it. So it's been excellent to talk with you. So thank you, Judy, so much.
Oh, and great. Well, thank you for having me.
Appreciate it.
If anybody has questions, they can contact me by the internet.
Excellent. So hear that, everybody. If you have any questions about Judy or unschooling or more information, she's an excellent resource to be had. She's living it. So it's a perfect resource to be had. So again, thank you. And for everybody listening to the call, we're nearing close to the end of Get Your Learning Groove On Telesummit. We still have two more calls. We have Miss Alana Pratt. It was scheduled for this week, but I just got notified of a change, so it will be a little bit later, I think coming into early next week. So, but it is really exciting. It's something that I'm really passionate about because I believe we have to think of ourselves as parents too, and of moms and of women, and, you know, take that time for ourselves so that we can be, you know, our cup can be full and we can be coming from our best selves when we're at home with our kids and on this home learning adventure. So she's all about self-love, taking that time for yourself, loving yourself, having fun with it, and stepping into the greatest you. And so I'm really excited for the interview next week with Miss Alana Pratt. And then we'll be doing a closing call soon after that. So, yes, I guess October is here. And get your learning groove on. We need to keep that sustained enthusiasm. So thank you, everybody, for coming to the call and listening in, and I look forward to talking with you all next week. Thanks very much.